from the Mutual Broadcasting System. This is STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. Now, retired Marine Intelligence Officer and globally recognized risk expert, Hal Kempfer.
Well, good morning or good afternoon or whatever time you're listening to this, but welcome to STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. And it's just me. I'm not interviewing someone today, but I'm going to talk about something that's very much in the news, something very substantial, something, a big change has taken place, which is President Trump has essentially federalized the Washington, D.C. police force and has mobilized the D.C. National Guard for countering crime in that legally unique federal district. And I'm going to talk about this because there's a little bit more than what is covered in the standard news on this. You know, first and foremost, I should probably go over my background for those who may have forgotten or not known. During the 90s, I was very much involved in a unique program we had in the, quote, war on drugs, where federal military intelligence personnel were working with federal law enforcement or federally sanctioned or participating task forces like the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area Program around the country. And it was under a joint task force called JTF-6 that was responsible for putting troops on the border, but there was also this other program, which was this intelligence support program. It was basically to develop capabilities, skills, knowledge, understanding of doing intelligence in law enforcement for effectively going after these drug cartels. So I kind of have a long background working with law enforcement, federal, state, local, special task forces across the board in some of these areas that are a lot of times they go, oh, we can't do that. That's against federal law. Well, it's not against federal law. I mean, there are very strict rules on what we could or could not do. But I have a background in this. And then later on, I was working in some unusual areas, the Consequence Management Program, where it was very much a joint interagency sort of effort looking at potentially weapons of mass destruction or natural disasters. And then actually formally my assigned duties were working in emergency preparedness, homeland security, and if necessary, homeland defense, basically doing what's called defense or military support of civil authorities, working with FEMA Region 9, one of the 10 FEMA regions, but also doing stuff on a much broader scale. And then later on as a federal contractor, I literally went all over the country, all over the world, working on military support and civil authorities, and have done exercises, have done training in the Washington, D.C. area, working specifically with those really unique, unusual legal parameters, which is that federal District of Columbia. So that's my background in this. I should also mention, I'm very familiar with the Posse Comitatus, which says that federal troops can't do law enforcement. And there are exceptions for that. And actually, Washington, D.C. is a unique thing, and I'm going to talk about that. So anyway, let me get into this. What did President Trump do? What did the White House do? Well, what they did under a thing called Home Rule, the Home Rule Act of 1973, he has federalized the D.C. police force for what he calls a crime emergency, and he's federalized them for 30 days. And under Section 740 of that act, he can do that. If he declares that there's some sort of emergency, in this case, a crime emergency, he can federalize the D.C. police. Now, that may sound kind of strange because you go, well, it's a big city police. How can he do that? They got a mayor and a city council. It is the Federal District of Columbia. Prior to 1973, essentially government, the city government for the District of Columbia was Congress. And I believe it was President would appoint with, I think, congressional concurrence, a commissioner or something like that, that would basically run Washington, D.C., and it was run federally. It was a federal district, and it was run on a federal level. And then in order to give some level of local control to Washington, D.C. residents, they did, under the Nixon administration, they set up this Home Rule Act, which allowed them to elect a mayor, and they had a city council, and that was the nascent beginnings of local Washington, D.C. government. And you may be aware that Washington, D.C. for some time has said they should be a state, particularly as their population exceeds the population of some states, but that has not happened. And I don't think Congress is too thrilled about the idea of adding, you know, maybe some are, but generally speaking, the Senate seems a little reluctant to give two senators for the District of Columbia. Anyway, long story short, it is a federal district, and that allows the federal government to do things there that it can't do in other places. Also, it is an interesting thing. It is a federal National Guard. Unlike the National Guard across the country in the 50 states and four territories or whatever, this National Guard is always federal. It's not huge, but it's always federal because it's a federal district. So if you're in the National Guard in Washington, D.C., you're in a National Guard that is your commander-in-chief is not a governor, it's the president. And through delegation, the ground side of the Guard is controlled through the Secretary of the Army, and the air side of that Guard is controlled through the Secretary of the Air Force, and there is the Secretary of Defense has basic overall control of both components, if you will, but it is always a federalized National Guard. So some of the things that you would see, you don't see. And then historically, even after the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878 was passed, that they would go through and do federal things with the National Guard. I think at one point, the U.S. Marshal, or the deputy U.S. Marshal in charge of Washington, D.C., was able to use them under his jurisdiction as a special police force. So they can do things in Washington, D.C. that they can't do anywhere else. Generally speaking, you can't use federal troops for law enforcement unless the president authorizes, you know, the Insurrection Act or declares the Insurrection Act. Now, that's a politically charged thing. It was talked about in California with the immigration protests, riots, whatever you want to call them, and it was never done, but that is a possibility that you could do that and then use federal troops for law enforcement purposes. But you can't do that anywhere else in the rest of the country except for Washington, D.C., where they're always in federal status, and it is a kind of unique thing that allows them to do that. They're technically the National Guard, so they're kind of a state military. But there is no state for Washington, D.C. It is really interesting. And they've been used for this. By the way, as before they were called the National Guard, they were called the Washington, D.C. Militia. Francis Scott Key, you know, Star Spangled Banner author, actually was part of the D.C. National Guard, just to kind of give you some history there. Now, what they cited was D.C. crime statistics, and a lot of it was discussion of 1923. 1923 was a spike year. There was a lot of violent crime in Washington, D.C. during that period. So there was. Overall, though, in the last three decades, there's been a decline in crime in Washington, D.C. However, Washington, D.C. crime is far higher, you know, multiple levels above the national average, particularly in some categories. So it is a crime-ridden city, but it is a crime-ridden city with a decrease in crime. So when the mayor comes out and says, we've seen a decrease in crime and it's not an emergency, there's some truth there. And when the president comes out with, Attorney General Pam Bondi and says, this is a crime-ridden city, there is some truth there. So they're both correct. So it has had big problems. The big thing, a couple of things that kind of kicked this off, and one of the biggest things was a very violent carjacking of a former Doge employee, Department of Government Efficiency. That was that thing Elon Musk was running. A guy who's kind of famous by his nickname, Big Balls, quote unquote. And he was injured and carjacked essentially in this thing. And that definitely got President Trump's attention. And therefore, he was pretty frustrated and angry with the level of crime on the streets in Washington, D.C. Separately, which I just kind of want to point out, is there appears to be an equal effort, and I don't know if they're going to use the National Guard for this, but they want to get the homeless off the streets of Washington, D.C. And I don't know how many have been out to Washington, D.C., but there are a lot of homeless people in Washington, D.C., and And it is seen as somewhat embarrassing because this is a city where we host foreign leaders, foreign dignitaries, where all the embassies are located from foreign countries. You know, we have all these things there, and yet we have people living on the streets and in parks and stuff all over the city. And that's just something you don't see. And I go to countries, developing countries, and you just don't see that homelessness problem on the streets like you do in Washington, D.C. or in other major cities in the U.S. It's just different in other countries. So it implies there is definitely something that's going to be done there. I don't know what the plan is of what they're going to do, but you know, we cannot provide housing, some sort of housing for our population, and that looks really bad. And I don't necessarily imply that this is all driven by egalitarian virtue, that they want to help these people. I think a lot of it is just, you know, to get them off the streets so they're not camping out. And there's a public safety issue there because many of them are mentally ill or have substance abuse problems. And that has been cited by members of the administration as one of the causes. I'm not saying it's the only cause, but it's one of the causes of why people are living on the streets. So we'll see what that turns into. Now, will this work? Well, I will say this. The 30-day limit is something that is under the Home Rule Act, and the president can do that. And I don't think there's really much legal challenge that they can put on that. And I don't know that, you know, they can say, well, we don't have a crime emergency. Again, the president can point to stats, Washington, D.C. has a higher than national average crime problem. So it is an issue, all right? Now, if it goes beyond the 30-day limit, well, then they're supposed to go to Congress. The president's supposed to go to Congress and ask for extensions. And that's where he could run into problems, all right? Some of it could be fiscal. And it also opens up potential court challenges saying, okay, what is your rationale for this? So he could be running into issues in the federal courts where they could look at this and say he's abusing his authority. Again, there's little legal doubt he can do this for the first 30 days, so this is going to happen, all right? But the question of extending it does come into it after 30 days. Separately, by using the National Guard as in whatever role he plans to use them, special police or whatever, this is something that's been done in the past. It's not new, all right? So, and if you look at what happened in California, he federalized about 4,000 California National Guard. He sent in about 700 Marines, and then he started demobilizing them within a couple of months, and didn't keep them in that status forever. So generally speaking, and I've said this early on when the California stuff was happening, there is a clock ticking in the background, and that clock is the U.S. Economy Act. And the U.S. Economy Act basically says, you know, you're supposed to use the most economical source of goods and services for a particular thing. And anytime you use the military, that is usually the most expensive option of all the things out there to provide certain services, to include security services. And so that does click in the background. Now, you can do it on an exigent basis where you go in and say, look, this is, we got to do it. We got to do it now. And these are the guys that can come in with all the training equipment and everything else in order to do it. That's a legitimate reason to bring in the military on a short-term basis. But to keep them there for an extremely long-term basis, they are extremely expensive, and it's just not a cost-effective way to do it. So I think there is a clock ticking on this as well, because the Economy Act still applies in Washington, D.C. It's a federal law. As a separate note, D.C. has a rather dubious reputation as city government. Some of us may remember Mayor Marion Barry, who, as I recall, got convicted for some nefarious things and, of course, was famously caught on video. I believe he was using a controlled substance in the presence of prostitutes or something like that. And he was the mayor of Washington, D.C. And there's also reports that one of the current city councilmen was caught on film actually taking an envelope full of cash, and the inference being that was a corruption issue. Nonetheless, let's just say this. Washington, D.C. City government has had problems pretty much almost going back to its inception, but certainly from the 80s on. There have been a lot of efforts to clean up Washington, D.C. government stuff, but there is corruption there. There are problems there. And it just, you know, I'm just going to say that is an issue. And I don't know if the corruption issue with the city police department is big or small. I couldn't tell you right off the top of my head, but that would be something that they might cite in federalizing, because when they federalize them, they can impose some federal oversight on them. And it does give them the opportunity, if there is corruption or other problems within the police department under federal authority, they could do some things that the mayor may be reluctant to do politically. So it's just a thought. All right. Now, California is obviously concerned because of the White House comments that once they do this in Washington, D.C., they do it in other cities. First off, there is no other city in the U.S. like Washington, D.C. Okay. It is unique, legally speaking. It is a federal district. Every other city I can think of is in a state, a sovereign state. Look at the 10th Amendment, the 11th Amendment to the Constitution. It explains state sovereignty. So there is nothing that they could do, you know, for example, on if they were to do this in another city, they just couldn't do it this way. All right. If he tried to do this in San Francisco or Los Angeles, there are things that restrict him. You know, Posse Comitatus Act that prevents federalized troops from doing law enforcement. It would prevent them from doing that. It prevented them from doing that despite all the rhetoric and everything else. The troops that were brought into California to assist ICE and to protect federal property were not doing law enforcement functions. They were there with them, sometimes in the field, providing security for those ICE agents and other federal agents that were doing ICE missions or immigration missions, but they were not doing law enforcement per se. The Insurrection Act, the president would have to, in order to overcome that, he would have to invoke the Insurrection Act. That would be legally challenged. All right. And it probably should be legally challenged because it's a big decision to invoke the Insurrection Act. And just casually jumping from city to city and saying you got a crime emergency and to impose the Insurrection Act, well, that's a pretty big deal. And I imagine that that would get pretty bogged down in federal courts pretty fast. All right. So there are reasons why. Now, California does have some things that they should do. Now, California, you may have heard, has fiscal issues. They have had huge fiscal issues. People don't remember this that clearly, but if you go back 16, 17 years ago, they were actually furloughing on a regular basis state employees because they didn't, because of financial problems. They didn't have the budget. So they were literally taking them off the payroll for a few days every month because they couldn't afford to pay them. That was a huge problem, was these state employee furloughs, and it cut into their paychecks of the state employees. And so that was a big issue. There was a big discussion back then, will California declare bankruptcy? It is not clear if a state can even, I mean, there are some who say, yes, states can declare bankruptcy, and they cite some things where this tried to happen. I think in the Depression, it might have been Arkansas or Missouri, I believe, defaulted on its bonds. And that's kind of cited as the example of what they can and can't do. And they tried to invoke sovereign state immunity under the Constitution to say that they didn't have to honor those bonds. And the court struck that down and said, no, that's a financial instrument. That is not something where you can impose sovereign state immunity. So it did actually impact them. I believe Puerto Rico declared bankruptcy, but that's a territory, not a state. Anyway, that's a big discussion right now. California's been dealing with these massive budget deficits. And so, long story short, behind all of this, there have been a series of things that California state agencies and officials have done to siphon off the immense amount of federal funding that comes to the state. And that's been going on for many years. Anyway, between 2015 2020, there were questions of how these federal funds were being allocated and used by various state agencies and state officials. And under federal regulations and guidelines, what these state officials, state agencies are doing certainly appeared to be in violation and non-compliance, if you will, regulatory non-compliance, something I know a little bit about because I was one time a compliance analyst for the federal government. So we all do things in our youth that we're not proud of. But anyway, whatever. You get the idea. Anyway, these state agencies, state officials did not want to comply with these federal regulations and guidelines, and those guidelines were designed to prevent waste, fraud, abuse, conflicts of interest, or public corruption involving federal funds administered by federally designated, compensated, and empowered state agencies. These state agencies being the administrative agents or instrumentalities for those federal agencies in administrating or managing those federal funds within that state. All right. To sum up this, the attitude within California, the head of training and exercises for the state agency that deals with funding from the Department of Homeland Security put it this way. He said, when the federal funds, in so many words, when the federal comes come to the state, we treat them like state funds, state money or state funds. And obviously, that is not how the federal government sees it. But that did kind of sum up the sort of attitude going there. So they have all these court judgments where they argued it successfully in state trial courts, appellate court, all the way up to the state Supreme Court. And it is a rather interesting thing. What does this mean? Okay. What it means in short is that, and I happen to personally know that Trump administration officials knew all about this. What it means in short is that they could literally cite these state court judgments, and that leaves the state in a difficult position. That leaves the state in a position of basically arguing against itself, all right? Now, if you go back 10 years ago, that was under the Obama administration. That was when Kamala Harris was the attorney general within the state of California. And certainly back then, I don't think they ever thought the day would ever come where they would see the situation that they see now under the Trump administration and what the Trump administration is doing in looking at these various states and these big cities. All right. I don't think they ever anticipated that. Certainly under the Obama administration, what we're arguing under the Biden administration, nobody's going to crack down on what California was doing. And I don't think California is unique. I'm pretty sure if I went to New York or Illinois, I would probably find some of the same issues. I do know that I've done work with the states of Texas and Florida, and it's a very different situation when you work with them. But this was kind of a legal ticking time bomb. And what this means is that the Trump administration can't do in California what it's doing in Washington, D.C., but they could literally cite these court rulings as saying California state agencies have said they're not instrumentalities of federal agencies, and then just turn around and say, okay, federal agencies, this could be a strictly federal thing. You can't use California state agencies as your instrumentalities. And they could cite these court rulings. And then California would be stuck literally arguing against itself, saying, well, what we said back then in court, we didn't really mean, you know, this is what we actually think. It is a very interesting situation, but the long story short is when Gavin Newsom and some others are concerned that what's happening in Washington, D.C. could have implications in California, there is a possibility. It's a rather, it's a different tack, but if those federal funds are cut off and California could not go to court and overturn the reasoning why, because essentially the state would be arguing against its own arguments and its own court judgments, they would probably have to reach some sort of agreement with the federal government that would allow them to get funds. That agreement is often termed a consent agreement. And if anyone remembers what happened with LAPD some years back, they operated under consent agreement for some time. But it would be rather interesting. You could have Cal DOJ, for example, California Department of Justice, California Office of Emergency Services, other state agencies potentially operating under federal consent decrees, which essentially puts federal oversight and a high degree of federal control over what those state agencies do. That instrumentality status is a thing that basically that $170 billion in federal funds that comes to the state of California relies upon, because the preponderance of that, the vast bulk of that, goes to state agencies to administrate those funds within the state. So there, it's not to say that President Trump could impose something like the Home Rule Act, Section 740, to take over state police, or we don't have state police, but to take over police within the state. And he couldn't just do what he's doing with the National Guard in California, because California is a sovereign state. But they could do something using those court judgments in such a way that that it could put the state in a real bind. And this is for Gavin Newsom and certainly for Rob Bonta, they have to be looking at this, if they are looking at it, And it's kind of a self-inflicted head wound, as we used to say in the Marine Corps, which is you did something to yourself. And, you know, if you go back 10, 15 years ago, the state really didn't want to comply with all those federal regulations and guidelines that came with that federal money. They wanted no strings attached, and there was a political environment in Washington, D.C. that allowed that to happen. That environment is definitely gone now, and now the state's going to have to figure out what it plans to do. All right? Probably scarier for the state. They also need to be a little concerned that President Trump may do what he's said that he's going to do in other circumstances, which is go back and ask for a refund, saying if you misspent the money in the past, maybe they'll go back and say, well, maybe you should pay back the federal government. There's a lot of possibilities on this. Again, not identical to what happened in D.C., but you have to deal with what the president is saying and the presidential intent, and certainly President Trump's frustration with, believe it or not, California, which he has expressed at times. There are things that have to be considered. Anyway, we'll see how the D.C. thing plays out. I don't really know if they're going to be able to decrease crime in 30 days, and I don't know if they're going to go back and try to do something where they try to re-up that 30-day thing, and I don't know if those federal troops, those National Guard troops that are under federal control will make a big difference, but we'll see what happens over the next month. Thanks for listening to Strat. Very involved. Wanted to get some of those details out there and bring it back to my home state, California, and some of the potential implications of what's happening in D.C. here in California. You can go to stratpodcast.com. You can also go to my YouTube channel, Hal Kempfer TV. You can always go to our corporate website, GRIPSA, GRIPSA.com, for Global Risk Intelligence and Planning. Hope you listened to the next Strat, and I hope you enjoyed this one.